I think bowling was first tried in France, in the city of Cannes in southern France. It was some type of dietary food doctor or technician who thought of it because he was always filling bowls in the hospital with different things for the mental patients. And people in this country got interested when somebody in this country got the idea that they wanted to try bowling. Whoever that was probably talked to their friends, and they probably tried different methods of bowling, and they probably tried to figure out what the French doctor meant, how he played the game.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our WAMC after, I was going to say panel, and we're done with the panel, actually, but we have David Greenberger with us, and we couldn't be more thrilled. David Greenberger and the Huckleberries present Universal Preservation, happening this Sunday afternoon at Universal Preservation Hall. See what they did there?
Yeah.
It's a showcase of the magic that lies in the art of conversation. Greenberger's latest artistic venture is a playground of conversation filled with knock-knock jokes, not-so-rhetorical questions, observations about the world, and things like we just heard.
Yes.
Things
like that, although that's specifically not from this project.
But, not from this project.
But it's the sound of my voice and there's music. It's a different ensemble, a full ensemble on this one, the Huckleberries.
The Huckleberries and David Greenberger will be there on Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, Universal Preservation Hall in Saratoga Springs. It's a great pleasure to welcome him back to the show. How are you?
I'm well. I got here in a timely fashion, driving down from Washington County, and glad to be here.
Were you... Have you gotten involved in the whole bean goose thing?
No, I've heard both those words, but not in that combination.
Okay, all right, I'll tell you later. It's a thing. This rare goose is in town, and the town is going, having a kerfuffle over the fact of great excitement that this special goose is in town. So if you were to go down and just about. A half a mile from your home, on the right-hand side, you'd see the goose.
Oh, I've missed this whole kerfuffle, but I will check it out when I'm back home.
I know you're busy. You got a show coming up. I completely understand. So, give us a sense of. I love the idea of this presenting this as Universal Preservation at the Universal Preservation Hall. So, how did this particular idea come about?
It came about 6 years ago when Philip Morris said to me, "Hey, we should have you do something." And it was one of those let's have lunch things. And we had lunch. And they were in the midst of doing a renovation on Universal Preservation Hall. And I said, why don't I create a piece based on some conversations with folks around there? They said, yeah. And so that's what I commenced doing in 2019, having conversations at the Senior Center in Saratoga and the Home of the Good Shepherd and a few other places. And at the same time, I put together this ensemble of musicians who are all known in the area, Peter Davis and Chris Carey and James Gascoigne and Sam Zucchini. And we recorded music, and then I developed monologue. I developed the text from my conversations. I removed myself from it, and I find a little moment that I like, and I build that into something that I can then connect with the music that we've recorded.
I know we've talked about this in the past, but this is a set in the sense of it is you don't veer from what you have written.
No, it's there's no improv in it. Even when I do a wasn't that something, Dave, or an aside, or huh? Well, those are all purposeful, and I do them the same way every time. It's to give the appearance of something that is off the cuff, but is considered. And the texts themselves, while a lot of these on Sunday and on the CD that we did have a sort of elements of somebody's history in them, I usually seek the sort of commonplace and the ordinary things that people do, because that's how we feel a connection with somebody else more than their heroic endeavors we honor, but that's what makes them different than us.
So we often don't hear the question, right? or we don't know what the question is.
No, you don't hear the question. So
what would elicit those responses? Give us an example of some of the questions that would elicit those responses that we do hear.
Somebody might have seen me stop by there a couple times before, and they said, "Weren't you here last week?" I said, "I think maybe that was 2 weeks ago." They go, "Oh, time goes by." Oh, yeah. So little by little, people are just having a friendly conversation the way you do in the checkout line or anything like that without even noticing it. And then later when I go through those, I'll realize there's really something here. And then I'll take it further. So everything isn't just, you know, what time is it or what happened to your shoe?
Although ever fascinating, sure. But as far as taking it further, do you do that in the moment, or does that come later within the collection and compilation?
I think a fair amount of it's in the moment, because I think that's the nature of conversation. I think a really good conversation that's sort of firing on all cylinders, you'll realize, wait a minute, how'd we get over here? We were talking about my shoe, and now we're talking about life and death. You know? And conversations just move around and have their own velocity. So that I think that just normally happens, and I like conversations. So.
Is that different? Is it different for you when you know that you're having conversation for a purpose, in the sense of that it's not subconscious as many of our conversations are in our daily lives?
I try not to. I mean, I think it's incumbent on me to become unaware of the fact that I'm recording it, and to also have them become unaware of it too. So the little recorder there should become invisible, because we've kind of connected with each other. I put myself into it. So I always think of these things as conversations, not as interviews. In an interview, you're saying a set piece. But
right.
What I said is a set piece.
Right. Yeah. Now, as far as the so you're really not in it at all, other than you telling the story.
Right. But I think that somebody else having that conversation with somebody would have a completely different one.
Right.
I think that the conversations are unique to these two people, me being one of them, being together at that moment in time and talking.
So I guess what I'm asking is, how much do you put yourself into what we're being told during the show? Do you tell about yourself and about how you got there and what it was? Or is it just bringing us to that moment of the conversation about, let's say, the shoe?
I'm absent from it. That said, in a live presentation, I'll reveal things of myself as between song patter, as it were.
Yeah.
But the pieces themselves are meant to just sort of take as a starting point an actual thing that happened in my private life, having a conversation with somebody and finding something of that has a resonance for somebody else. And with the addition of music, it gives it sort of an emotional place where this lives. The music is very active. It's like a band with a guy talking. The music is very much a part of it. And so in any given piece, there might be a piece that's 2.5 minutes long, and I may have spoken for 50 seconds of that. But hopefully what happens for a listener is that it's all heard as one. They're not like, oh, he's talking, now we're waiting for him to come back. It's all of a piece. So the music that we've created, separate from me doing the monologues, I built up a storehouse of these musical pieces that we did in the studio until I had about 4 dozen of them. Then I would respond to the music with which of these texts that I developed, because I developed about 50 texts, mm-hmm. would go with this music, allowing for that process to surprise me, where I might think, I thought this was sad, but when I try it with this music, I think it could be triumphant. So it changes the way I enunciate it, or I find some small detail in it, because I'm not creating a documentary about the moment I was with somebody. I'm trying to find something, a commonality, a universal that I'm preserving.
So if I'm hearing you correctly, then the music does come first, then?
Well, they're on two separate tracks.
Right.
So, but I always, in whatever way that I do this with many different musical collaborators over the years, the music, I never give anybody text to write music to. I want to respond to music, and in this case, it's music that I was involved right there from the beginning and kind of directing it in some kind of shape. And just saying, once you have more than one musician in a room, somebody strummed something and somebody else hit a funny little rhythm on a drum, like, oh, I do that again. And they, what did I do? I said, I don't know. You were just getting your drum ready. I like that. So they would record that then.
Okay, but then you're thinking of that as you're listening to it and they're recording it, you're thinking of that musically, and you're not necessarily thinking about how that could correspond with the stories that you
not
that
at
you
all
have.
No, so I've got two separate folders, as it were, that I'm developing. One is text and one is music, and I'll know that I want a good range of musical motifs and moods, and so somebody, I want something fast, and so I'll just know that I want to have a good storehouse of possibilities there.
Does it matter to you? I was fascinated when you were talking about something that could be sad and ends up being triumphant. Is that universal? I mean, will most people find that it the same way when they listen to it?
I hope so. I mean, I'm the one sort of steering this, so I'm the one that when I put the two together, I feel like this has emotional believability to it,
right,
for me. And I've got a different connection to it, but as an artist putting stuff into the public realm, I'll then have a sense like, I feel like if I believe that this is emotionally real, it should be that way for somebody else.
Yeah. It would seem to me easier to tell a triumphant story than a sad story.
I think maybe it could be the other way around, really.
It's
almost sad things. Oh, let's just play a minor key thing. I mean, it's almost... But it's nice to find...
You don't want to bum out the audience,
right.
I guess is what I'm getting to.
Well, but I think you want to find the small subtleties within anything. Nothing is all completely one thing or the other.
The stories that you collect, some of these go back quite a ways, right? I mean, are those... Like, what we'll hear on Sunday, are these relatively new conversations?
Oh, yeah. So I did all these specifically for this project, and it was originally... to be presented when they reopened in 2020.
Yep.
And we had the recording done, and then, of course, something stepped in front of doing anything for a couple of years. And so it was long delayed, though the recording was done. So for the last couple of weeks now, we've been rehearsing this material to learn how to play it anew. So.
What's it been like to sort of to remember it, to reacquaint yourself? To it.
There's something nice about taking some time away from something and coming to it new. In this, that usually happens. There's a time lapse in creating some of these things, but in this case, it was a much more extreme time lapse because the recording was done, January 2020, and then now it's 5 years later, and so revisiting it, being in a room with these top flight musicians who are gentlemen, yeah. is an uplifting experience, just being part of an ensemble as we rehearse it, and it'll be that way on Sunday for me.
How much do you want us to know about about the person who is speaking in the moment?
Very, very little. In a way, they're just a springboard for somebody to assign their own, by me explaining completely who somebody was, and then playing a piece, it's like I've created a slideshow, and you think, that's nice. Isn't Herbie a nice guy? The absence, I do credit everything, in the recordings and the CDs.
Sure.
But the absence of me explaining who they are has somebody filling it in, saying, geez, that reminded me of my uncle. Or somebody else might think, that was like beatnik poetry. However somebody responds to it is perfectly fine with me because I feel like that's an art experience. Art is not about consensus.
And we're just about out of time, but you have done it where we actually hear the person, that voice, right?
I did do a big project about 20 years ago called Growing Old in East L.A. that was a very different thing. I did that for the California Council for the Humanities.
Okay.
That's the thing I did with those guys from Los Lobos.
Right.
But that's the only time I was sort of hosting a thing in a way. I mean, that was just the right tool for the job.
Which is, again, more interview and less conversation.
Had all the conversational bits, and we just chopped it up, but it was their voices. And so
yes.
It was, in the case of that one, it was, hi, I'm David Greenberger. I'm here in East L.A., and, here's what I'm doing.
But you're interpreting it now. in a way?
Well, definitely. I mean, only insofar as when somebody repeats something that somebody told them. You said, and then my aunt was here, and you know what she said? And you change your voice just a little bit doing that. I think that we tell those things out of a respect for the moment and honoring the sort of human condition.
David Greenberger and the Huckleberries present Universal Preservation this Sunday afternoon at UPH in Saratoga Springs, New York. You can find out more. It's at 3 o'clock, by the way. You can find out more at uph.org, at uph.org. David, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me on.
To the Roundtable on WAMC.